Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this presentation of the Banking Inquiry Report. And I'd like to acknowledge the presence of some of those who helped with the research and the drafting. Thanks to all who participated, and obviously welcome and acknowledge my colleague, Dr. Russell Norman. Can I also offer the apologies right up front of Jim Anderton, who's quite ill and not able to be with us this morning. So he sends his apologies to you all. Members of the press should have a copy of covering press material, and the report's freely available. Russell and I will take a minute or two to just outline our views on the key conclusions, and then we're happy to answer any questions that you might have. Russell, are you happy for me to do a quick intro up front and pass to you? This was obviously a cooperative effort between three parties in Parliament, Labour, the Greens and the Progressives. All parties were invited, some declined, some didn't reply. The reason that we've used the unusual process that we did is because the Finance and Expenditure Committee refused to consider this important issue affecting thousands of New Zealanders, despite early indications from government members that they would do so. That's history now. What matters is the issue. And the evidence presented to this inquiry concluded that the Reserve Bank was right and that the major banks were not right, that the full value of the OCR cuts was not passed through to the market in terms of short-term variable interest rates, business loans and mortgages, and not close to being passed through to credit card rates. That meant New Zealanders were paying too much for their loans, too much for their mortgage during the depth of the recession, and that is something that the report argues is inappropriate. The report goes on to say that this phenomenon, which occurred despite the protestations of the Reserve Bank, raises some questions about the effectiveness of monetary policy's sole reliance on the OCR, if that is a now less effective instrument, and also raises some broader questions about the interrelationship between monetary policy and tax policy, particularly in terms of the fueling of the housing bubble. It's important to note, in the end of my introductory remarks, that the conclusions of the report do not represent the policy of the three parties. This is an input to policy making now by the three parties, and we will all need to consider the implications of its results as we move through our own manifesto processes. Russell.
Just to add a few things to that, I mean, I think what's really marked about the report is the degree of consensus around some of the key problems around dealing with asset bubbles and the way that we don't have the tools that we really need to deal with the asset bubbles that have been driving inflation. The Greens do have a policy of capital gains tax excluding the family home. We do have a policy of changing the tax treatment of investment properties. We think they're essential tools in order to dealing with these kind of asset bubbles when they emerge. I think it's also quite marked the way that there was so much synergy from so many different groups around a lot of these issues. The groups that came and spoke to us were from a broad range: federated farmers, manufacturers and exporters. The productive sector of the economy has really felt the complete absence of policy to directly target these asset bubbles when they emerge, and it's the whole of the productive sector that's worn the cost. I also think, and it's a pity Jim Anderton's not here, because I think the lack of competition in the banking sector is a real problem. It is an oligopoly. And if you read I particularly recommend Professor John Quiggin's peer review to read about, because they obviously have a lot of experience with the four-pillar policy in Australia and the role of that oligopoly. We need more competition in banking, and Jim Anderton's contribution and the alliance in terms of Kiwi Bank has made a start. And when you think that 70% basis points, that 70 basis points that wasn't passed on to mortgagee, people with home mortgages, businesses and stuff, has cost the country somewhere in the order of $2 billion annualised, putting some extra capital into Kiwi Bank in order to drive down interest rates right across the economy actually has a really good return. So even though it might look expensive to put a bit more capital into Kiwi Bank to make it a better competitor to the Big Four, the returns across the whole of the New Zealand economy are very significant, because even just the fact that we didn't pass on 0.7% has probably cost the economy annualised about $2 billion. So there are very significant implications in introducing a real competitor to the Big Four. I'll leave it there. There's a lot more in the report, and it's well worth a look at. I think actually what happened in this inquiry is the debate that the whole country should be having. And we open that debate. It isn't finished yet. We need to progress it further.
Does Labor agree that Kiwi Bank should be better capitalised?
As I say, this report now needs to go through our party process, but I think there'd be very broad support within Labor for the idea that Kiwi Bank should be expanded and it should be able to play an increasing role as a key competitor in the market.
Given, though, that the banks failed to turn up to this inquiry, how much stock... I mean, having actually not got one half of the story and what you don't... I mean, because really, how much stock can you put in this? You didn't hear from the banks. You didn't hear their side of the story.
Well, let's flip that around and say that the banks told us privately they had a really good story to tell, they were just not willing or too busy to tell it. We can only go on the evidence that was presented. The Reserve Bank made available all its publicly available information, I think assisted our researchers, and that was corroborated by surprising unanimity, I think, of the submissions that were received, a full 50 of them. And as I say, we can only report the evidence that's given to the inquiry. There was very little debate in the end about the fact that the OCR cuts were not fully passed through. The question was whether we could be exact about it, and the report's very honest about the limitations of the data, the fact that the Reserve Bank does not publish statistics on offshore funding costs, and that is probably the reason that we hedge slightly on how many basis points.
Okay, so what would you like to see happen now as a result of this?
Well, we certainly wouldn't want to see this ever happen again, and to the extent that there's any residual non-pass-through, we would still call on the banks to do the right thing and pass that through to hard-working Kiwis and businesses. And as Russell said, the productive sector has been getting it in the neck during the toughest period of this recession. The second thing, this issue's in the open now, and I think the Governor of the Reserve Bank once said in front of the Finance and Expenditure Committee, if the banks want the benefit of an ultra-orthodox monetary policy, then they have to show good corporate citizenship. Otherwise, somebody's going to ask whether the OCR on its own is a sufficient tool. Well, guess what? They've just asked.
I also think it raises some very interesting policy debates about regulation. Because if you read Quiggin's report, one of the things Quiggin's, the argument he makes, is the four pillars policy in Australia was part of the reason why the big four Australian banks didn't get into the whole derivatives and the subprime mortgage crisis. His argument is that because of that, because they couldn't have a competition for one trying to swallow the other, actually there was no great incentive for them to get into those very risky investments in order to try to get the upper hand over the other. That is, that banking regulation, which the four pillars policy is quite a right down one end of an extreme of banking regulation, was quite successful at producing a much more stable financial system. Now, we also know that the other side of that is the lack of competition amongst those four means that we need also to make sure that we actually get the pass-through of the OCR and the rest, to make sure that we actually, that the other side of that is the lack of competition because of the big four. So, you know, we've got to deal with both sides of the regulation. It also raises the issue, I think, of counter-cyclical kind of prudential regulation, if you like, because the banks are currently saying, you know, they said, oh, part of the reason that, you know, we haven't passed it on is we had to put aside all this money for bad debts. Actually, what it means is that on the upside, they're not putting aside any money for bad debt, so they're amplifying the boom. And then on the downside, they're putting aside all this money for bad debt, so they're amplifying the bust. It would be much better to have counter-cyclical prudential regulation so that on the upside, we make them put aside money for bad debts, which would lower the upside a little bit, and then on the downside, they would already have that money put aside. I think there's a strong argument for better regulation of the banks. Sorry, Barry.
Well,
they
covered it.
The argument was made at the time, and it was made by someone obviously in the banking sector, but a healthy, profitable banks equal a healthy economy. I mean, do you have a problem with banks making money?
We don't have a problem with banks making money, but, you know, let's take just note of the fact that the four big banks are making more money than the entire NZX 50. These are very substantial players in our economy. They have a huge impact on the productive sector. We've got a right, I think actually the government's got a responsibility, to regulate them in the best interests of New Zealand. And what we've seen is the lack of that pass-through of probably around 70 points has not been in the best interest of New Zealand and has actually cost us maybe $1 to $2 billion.
And to go further than that, nobody is suggesting realistically that the New Zealand banking sector is under any threat. and the acknowledged truth that a strong banking sector is good for your economy cannot be a carte blanche excuse for banks to undertake any behaviour that they consider profitable. So I think that's really a null argument in this context.
Do you have a problem with the banks not passing through the Reserve Bank rate increases on their side of the cycle?
I think for OCR to work well as an instrument, it should be passed through on the upside and the downside. That is the assumption that the Reserve Bank makes when they set interest rate policy. The fact that it has not been passed through on the downside here has hurt ordinary New Zealanders in terms of their costs. It has undermined the effectiveness of monetary policy. The latter would be true on the upside as well.
So New Zealanders have saved by banks not passing through those reserves?
It's a lovely question, but we've tried to restrict ourselves to the data here, and I don't have the data on that question.
On that data, you say $2 billion based on an annualisation of that 70 basis point gap. Has that 70 basis point gap persisted, and is the amount of our current debt levels, does that differential apply overall to the outstanding debt level, or is this on a very narrow range of lending, the lending to businesses perhaps that the Reserve Bank lags concerns about?
We may both want to comment on that. Let me give you my starter on it. Firstly, the evidence presented in the inquiry is at the point in time that the evidence was given. There will have been some changes since then. Margins have shifted, and the last quarter's profits are different from the quarter before. So let's acknowledge that it's a snapshot, but nonetheless the evidence is well-founded at the time it was presented. Secondly, the report does not pretend to have access to enough data to be absolutely specific about the number of basis points. I agree with the estimate my colleague's given, but we're quite clear that the inability to get a precise fix on the weighted average of offshore borrowing costs means that that's a range rather than a point. So in the order of 0.5 to 0.75% non-pass-through at the time. The report also says that's affected short-term variable rates and mortgages, both to households, businesses and farms. It has not been repeated in longer-term rates, but that's interesting because those loans are typically overweight in the housing sector rather than the business sector, and that's another factor that's led us to impute a pro-cyclical effect in the housing market.
I think David's covered that, but just to go back to your original question, you can flip that question as well, right? Because the banks argue that the reason they couldn't pass through was because of the high cost of overseas borrowing, right? But is that symmetrical? When they had lower costs in overseas borrowing, were they passing through the lower costs in overseas borrowing to New Zealand borrowers? New Zealand borrowers were borrowing off the banks who were then getting it cheaper overseas than perhaps what they were through the OCR. So was it symmetrical? If they're going to make that argument, is there another side of it whereby they were providing cheaper loans in New Zealand because of that? And it's not clear that it is symmetrical.
So what you're saying basically is the banks have been lining their own pockets.
You could very well conclude that.
Which is what you'd expect in an oligopoly. The banks have an oligopoly and they're using the fact so that you don't have complete competition. If you had complete competition, then they couldn't pass on the cost of their bad debts onto borrowers. Because in a condition of complete competition, they made some bad loans in the past, they just pay for those bad loans. That's business. They made money out of some of those loans that were risky, but they've also now worn a cost of some of those loans. That's just business. Instead, what the banks are saying is, oh no, we're going to pass on some of the cost of those bad loans. They can only do that because there isn't full competition in the banking sector.
And the report raises the question of principle about whether today or tomorrow's borrowers should be offsetting loans associated with the risks on yesterday's borrowers. When the bank took the profit on those loans, surely the bank has a responsibility to own the costs of them as well.
Yeah.
What sort of response do you want from the government?
Well, the report makes a number of recommendations that I think will be germane to issues the government will need to consider. I think there's material here that the Reserve Bank will want to consider and hopefully comment on, that the Treasury will want to take into account, and that the Minister of Finance hopefully will want to reflect upon. Certainly our parties will reflect upon these issues as we finalise our policies for the next election.
Do you think the banks are going to take any notice themselves?
It would be prudent, no doubt, for the banks to display good corporate citizenship over the next couple of years, but that's a decision that they will make, and I guess it depends whether you take a long-term or a short-term view of shareholders' interests.
Okay.
Is it realistic to expect in the size of New Zealand's economy to increase the number of banks, though?
Is it realistic?
Yeah, to increase. I mean, when KiwiBank entered the market, the point was made that New Zealand had enough banks. Okay, it's survived. But, I mean, how many banks we've got now? Five for a population of 4 million people?
Well, I think this comes back to Russell's point. From the peer reviewers, both raised the issue that the market has oligopoly characteristics. And when you've got an oligopoly happening, then you've certainly got room for more players.
So are you saying that we have more banks or more regulation or both?
My view would be both. I think that having KiwiBank in there as an independent player, because let's remember, I mean, it is a very different kind of player to the other four. Not only is it New Zealand owned, but it's got government ownership of it. So I think having that as an independent player would make a big difference, particularly if it was a bigger player. I do think we also need to look at more regulation. And that's both, you know, whether that's looking at capital adequacy ratios, which has been one of the things that's been talked about a lot, is using increasing capital adequacy ratios to try to deal with asset bubbles when you see them. Using one of the things that was also discussed was using basically a sterilisation of large capital inflows. The OCR allows us to control the price of money, but it doesn't allow us to control the volume of capital coming into New Zealand. If anything, it works against us. We increase the OCR, the amount of capital coming into New Zealand increases, attracted by the high interest rates, which then drives inflation because it pushes up housing prices. The OCR is not working to do what we set it up to do, and that's what we should acknowledge, which means that you can call it more regulation. I just call it smarter regulation. We need to be smarter about the way we regulate monetary policy and the financial sector. It's not rocket science. A lot of these solutions exist overseas. They've been used in other places.
I think Labor would want to condition that with a couple of points. The first is that it's unlikely that our party would support a removal of the independence of our central bank. We believe on balance it's valid to have an independent central bank, so that's not in question for us. And secondly, it's unlikely that we would support, if you like, hard price regulation, the setting of bank interest rates, for example. But between those points and where we are today, there is an awful lot of ground that needs to be traversed and considered.
Yeah.
Which country's monetary policy framework would the Greens see New Zealand to
I'm not going to nominate any particular country, but I would draw your attention to the very lively debate in the financial sector and the regulators of the financial sector all over the world now about increased regulation and changing the way that we regulate the financial sector.
That's coming anyway through Basel II and a lot of talk about countercyclical capital adequacy.
That's true, but you know, New Zealand needs to then take what's coming from the international debate and apply it to what's relevant to a small country with its own currency that's highly buffeted, highly traded currency. How do we modify what's coming out of that and apply it to New Zealand?
And very importantly, just to add to that point, you need to reflect upon whether the Reserve Bank Act as currently constituted gives the Reserve Bank all of the powers it needs to fully implement that, covering off on both the financial stability and the monetary policy objectives. So for example, if one were using capital adequacy ratios as a tool of regulating the quantity of money rather than the stability of the banking sector, then arguably that is a purpose different from the current structure of the Act.
Okay. Look at the recent bank results. Do they not demonstrate that the banks are now starting to wear more of the burden of the recession, which was a concern for the committee?
I think it's certainly true that the most recent quarter shows a downturn in profits relative to the quarter before. That doesn't take away the point about whether it is appropriate for current borrowers to wear the risks on previous borrowings. And it also begs the question of exactly what costs are being provided for within that total.
Particularly, I mean, if you take out, you know, the provision for bad debt and the provision for the tax liabilities that they're running into as they lose the court cases, then actually the numbers look pretty different. So you've got to ask the question, in a competitive market, would current borrowers be wearing the costs for the bank's bad decisions in the past? They probably wouldn't. I think that's pretty clear. And, of course, the tax liabilities is like a whole separate issue.
You're not jumping the gun, but you're afraid, deeming the high level of provisions for bad debts, you know, excluding them from your sort of calculations as far as how profitable the banks are?
How do you mean?
Well, provisions are a legitimate expense. I mean, they may not be realised, but many of them will be realised as genuine losses. Are you discounting that fact, or what?
All I'm saying is that if you look at the underlying profitability of the banks, it's still pretty damn good.
Excluding provisions.
If you exclude those two kinds of provisions, yeah. And so I would, you know, I think it's pretty straightforward. The bad debt provision, there's two ways of dealing with it. Well, one I've already talked about, that, you know, in a competitive market it wouldn't necessarily be there. Should there be better regulation so that there has to be bad debt provision on the way out? And then on the tax liability stuff, obviously it's currently under appeal, so one needs to be a bit careful about it. But clearly these were decisions made by the banks. They were business decisions made by the banks about how they were going to pay their tax. And it's not at all clear why current borrowers should be responsible for those bad decisions rather than it hitting the bank's bottom line rather than the bank passing it on.
It's not our position that bad debt provisioning is an inappropriate thing in itself. The question is whether it's a sufficient counter-argument to the non-pass-through of OCR cuts, and that's the point that we're inquiring for.
Yeah.
Any other questions at all? I'd like to thank you all for coming, and I'd like to again thank all of those who've assisted in the preparation. Of course, the submitters, there's a full list of submissions available. There's hard and soft copies of the report should anybody want them. And you can all go to bankinquiry.org.nz if you'd like to see online comment or get further access to submissions. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks.